Today is Wednesday. It's October 26th, 2022, and it's 2:40 in the afternoon. Hi, I'm John Williams. You found the Mincing Rascals podcast again. Share it with your friends. Portions of this are broadcast on Saturday nights on WGN Radio at 8, and you can always hear me weekdays on WGN Radio from 10 to 2.
I'm Austin Burt from the Illinois Policy Institute. You can also listen to my podcast, America's Talking.
I'm Brandon Pope from WCIU and Block Club Chicago's On the Block. You can also hear my podcast, Making, with WBEZ on Thursdays.
I'm Mark Arino with the Washington Post and ABC News.
Mark, thanks for joining us again. Eric Zorn isn't here today. He normally rounds out our panel, but it's sure good to have you pop in again. Nice to see you, my friend.
I'm so happy to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is always fun.
I'm going to miss Eric's usual whimsical comment. He usually has something whimsical.
He's quick.
Yeah, very quick with it, you know?
Eric usually listens to these evenings when he's not here. So, Eric, we love you, we miss you, and you are the grandfather of this podcast. Kanye West, that's Ye of late, made a bizarre statement about Jews recently. In a tweet, he said he would go DEFCON 3 on Jewish people. He suggested in a text exchange that Diddy was being controlled by the Jews. Recently, he said slavery was a choice and the COVID vaccine was the mark of the beast. He recently wore a shirt favored by white supremacist groups at his fashion show. In 2021, Bloomberg estimated his wealth at $6 billion. But now, having lost deals with Adidas and Gap, CAA, Vogue, Anna Wintour, and others, according to Forbes, he's probably worth around $400 million. He has been restricted on Instagram and Twitter, and some stadium shows have been canceled. Even a documentary about him is now on the shelf. CNN did an interview this week with a music critic from L.A., a black man who's from Detroit, and said that hip-hop really informed his musical taste in his life, but he said he's not going to listen to Ye's music anymore either. I don't know where to begin on this. I don't know that this is an example of cancel culture. That's a thing. That movie Tar deals in it, and I haven't seen that movie yet, but I hear it's terrific. I'm anxious to see it, and I'm interested in the phenomenon, but this seems to be something different. Brandon, what the hell happened to Kanye?
I think we're all trying to figure that out. This has been quite a rough thing to watch. I mean, the hurt that Kanye's words have caused. We saw there was a viral image of, I think it was the Proud Boys or Oath Keepers or some sort of white supremacist group, but I believe in LA, that was draping over a sign saying, you know, we agree with Kanye and something about the Jewish people. The truth of the matter is this: Kanye West has been trafficking in both anti-blackness, misogyny, and anti-Semitism for a little bit now. The anti-Semitism has really emerged heavy recently, and that's ultimately what caused cancellation here. And I think anti-blackness, anti-Semitism, they're both two disgusting fruits from the same tree. But it's raised a lot of interesting discussions within my own circles about the role of power dynamics when it comes to these things, right? I mean, it's kind of a lesson in power, race, and capitalism. Kanye was dropped by all these brands, right, after the anti-Semitic comments. But he's been saying anti-black comments for a long time with no repercussions, really. Whereas there are powerful white people, Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump, who traffic in anti-Semitism. There's really not been any blowback yet. They're still having their promotions here. My point here is not that Kanye shouldn't have been punished for his anti-Semitism. He absolutely should have. I just wish our society had the same energy for the misogyny and the anti-blackness as well that he was trafficking in, which also those statements he made, like slavery is a choice, white lives matter, things like that, also were taken by, you know, hate groups and inflamed. Ultimately, I think there needs to be a conversation between the Jewish community and the black community, because both have a very complicated and messy discussion to be had about how both groups treat each other. There is a trend of anti-Semitism in some mainstream black civil rights talk. Look at Louis Farrakhan, or go to any barbershop and you're going to hear some anti-Semitic thoughts. on the flip side, and I've talked to some Jewish friends about this, there's anti-blackness in the Jewish community, despite there being black people who are Jewish, as Kanye tried to not so eloquently point out. So it needs to be a conversation about how those two intersect, because both are wrong. And I just hate the fact that Kanye West's, I don't know how better way to put it, his dumbassery has made that conversation 10 times more difficult. I'm hoping that by his antics, we are able to come to a sense of healing and a better understanding of each other and the challenges that both of our minority groups deal with, and the road ahead and the hate we face, but how we, you know, come together. Because at this point, I'm seeing the conversation online about this. It feels very finger pointy. It feels very my group versus your group. And the truth of the matter is, that's never been a way to solve any issues. People got to come together. Hate in all forms is wrong. We're seeing the end of Kanye West here. It's over. It's over.
I thought one of the interesting things to pick up on what Brandon was saying at the end there, that Ye said in the interview that's since been taken down on Drink Champs, which was sort of where a lot of his most incendiary, hurtful, terrible anti-Semitic remarks have come from in the last couple weeks. He said something like, you know, it's my block versus your block. And that was the mentality. And he's going like, if someone gets killed on my block by someone from that other block, it's me against that whole other block. And he is absolutely, and all of the rhetoric, I think, stems from that when he's talking about the Jewish people as this, you know, this block of people who all say and do and think the same thing and who have wronged him and have wronged so many other people. It's this tribalism and collectivism.
Exactly. Yeah.
And almost all of those things are, once he feels hurt, the one thing I could say about him is that guy has an insane life. Imagine being Ye West for the last 5 years. I don't know how any person could deal with that, but he clearly has a very, very emotionally charged, crazy reaction to feeling wronged by a group of people or individuals that he will then stereotype as a group. And I think every talking point from them has been like reverse. What's that called? It's like motivated reasoning to justify his hurt feelings.
If I could jump in, I mean, I think that there's another layer to this, is that Kanye has adopted the language of grievance, which has been amplified under the Trump administration. So Trump, you know, has basically created this sort of opening for public figures who are complete narcissists to suddenly adopt this language that I'm being wronged, everybody's against me, instead of owning things that they do. Trump was the president of the United States. It was the most powerful man in the world. But if you heard it from his own mouth, that he was the biggest victim in the world. So it's this really strange positioning. And Kanye has adopted that now. He's the most popular, arguably one of the most popular entertainers in the world, certainly one of the richest with all the deals that he had. But according to him, that all these companies weren't treating him fairly, that they were working. You know, I think that he got so overwhelmed by all of this sudden power, and that he's also probably a complete narcissist, that what's coming out of his mouth is this kind of insane grievance talk that to your common ordinary people sounds completely insane. He thinks if everybody in the world and their grandmother doesn't understand that he's changed his legal name to Ye, that somehow they're wronging him.
But see, that's, you know, why I wonder how seriously to take him. Like, is he just copying this?
I think you can take it very seriously, because I think that he has just, I think it's very deep, that there's something really, really broken inside of him that it likely existed long before. I'm not a psychologist.
Okay, but let me ask you this then. So while he may genuinely feel those things, are they genuine? Has anybody really been belittling him or marginalizing him? It seems to me like he's had a nice run.
I think that when you're in a public spot like he is, anybody who has that platform is going to be a target of criticism. It comes along with basically having that much power and being in the spotlight like that. And so it's just depending on how you deal with it. And he just couldn't deal with anything. I don't think he had some kind of terrible business deals go wrong. I mean, he can do whatever he wants to do. That's the whole thing. I mean, like, Trump was the most powerful man in the world. Yes, yet his vocabulary was one of grievance and one of victim he is, and people are mean to me. And so I think it's this very strange thing that that he saw that grievance really worked well for Trump.
Sure. So, but it strikes me as a pose then, right? So you weren't really grieved. Maybe there's no distinction. If you feel it, then you feel it. But nobody has truly marginalized Ye.
But I think the more that the media coverage about him is quote unquote negative.
Well, yeah, now.
It's been going on for a while. Now, maybe not the. Well, I think maybe the anti-Semitism was there, but I think the strange behavior, I mean, going way back, I mean, when he was with Trump in the Oval Office wearing the red cap and everything.
What makes it more challenging, too, is the mental health factor. We know that Kanye West suffers from severe mental health problems. What has annoyed me in the past is people excusing his behavior and saying, well, mental health. He's saying this because he's got bad mental health. When the truth of the matter is, that's a disservice to people who have mental health disorders. There's plenty of people that have mental health issues who don't say hateful things about marginalized groups.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, you know, that's the part of the conversation too, where there's got to be a little bit of nuance there. To the grievance aspect, the pattern's been there. Kanye, I love the comparisons you drew there with Donald Trump, because Kanye has said what he likes most about Trump is his what he calls dragon energy. This idea of standing up for the little guy. This idea of this group is doing this to me, and so I've got to fight back. Honestly, that has been a big part of Kanye's brand. In some ways, this underdog mentality and these forces are against me ever since he started his career. You know what's really taken me aback about all this? He had an interview with Piers Morgan. I don't know if anybody saw any clips from that.
I did, yeah.
After he said these comments on the Drink Champs interview, I was connecting dots. I really wasn't trying to excuse it. What I was connecting was like, okay, Kanye has issues with Jewish people in his life, Pete Davidson being one of them. And I took his comments at first as, oh, he's talking about Pete Davidson, who is, you know, sleeping with his ex-wife and things like that. But then he goes on Piers Morgan and he doubles down. Piers Morgan, not a great journalist. I can't even call him a journalist. Right. Gives him the opportunity to apologize. And Kanye says, no. Piers says, well, your comments hurt a lot of people. Kanye says, well, that was the point.
Right.
Once I saw that, my jaw dropped. And because at that point, it's like, this is intentional. So it kind of goes to what you're saying, Mark. This grievance politics, that attitude that Trump has, Kanye is all about that. Same with Elon Musk. They're a part of that same energy. And right now it's not doing well for him financially, clearly.
Yeah, it reminds me back 20 years ago. This is a completely side road, but really quickly, it reminds me when in the 90s, when all these rock bands in Chicago got really popular, right? And the Smashing Pumpkins were the number one band that got really popular out of Chicago. So they were number one at the top of the hit heap here. And so therefore, they got tons of just crap from other bands and other people that would just make fun of them because they were so popular. And Billy Corgan has carried that with him for decades to come. Masterful musician, great songwriter, but he could not let go of the fact that people just made fun of him because he was so popular. And it was that type of thing where someone who just could not deal with that sudden fame, there's something broken there. And so I'm not comparing Billy Corgan to Kanye West at all, but I saw that sort of same sort of thing of like, I am so successful, I have everything I want. I one in a million chance I was able to break through the industry, but I'm really mad at people who just not. If 120% of people don't love me, then I'm really upset about that. And I think that was festering. And then when he entered Trump world, then he found language there that was working on a global scale then and a community of people and media that would embrace that grievance language. He went to town. This was great. He was home once he found that world. And I think that's a really I think that's sort of that's the evolution there.
I was thinking back on the Netflix documentary on him, right? To go back to his early career. This is a man who basically at every step of the way, everyone said he was doing the wrong thing. Nobody paid him any respect, and he did what he thought was in his artistic vision to do, and then killed it, right? And kept getting more and more and more popular, kept having more and more success, doing things that maybe were new and innovative, like any great artist would do. But then when you apply that same thing to, I guess, sort of this grievance language that we're talking about, where, oh, this is hurting someone, that's a signal that I'm right and that I kind of need to double down. Like, I'm doing something nobody else is doing. I'm doing something no one else is going to say. If I don't say it, who's going to say it?
Yeah.
Right. So I think at its core, I do think it's what, Brandon, what you said, where it's like there's a couple of, instances of Jewish people who, like any people, when you're a billionaire, you're having, huge problems with. And he takes that and runs with it. And if anyone questions him on it, who are you to question my feelings? You're going to talk about the Holocaust. I'm going to talk about the black children being aborted. Right. And then it's just he will not give an inch and will not admit he's wrong about anything, because that's seen as weakness. And he's never been rewarded, for that. It's all really sad. Like, to Brandt's point, like, it's very sad to watch.
He talked to ABC News, I think, a week before the one interview that I forgot who he talked with that really kind of brought all this into the headlines. But at the time, and I wrote a story. I got the transcript the day that he did the interview, and I wrote the story for ABC's website. So I had his words, and I can tell you that he cannot sustain in his talking, just, here, this was an unfiltered manuscript or transcript conversation. He could not sustain a thought more than a millisecond. It was very difficult to put together coherency for that. So there's also like a question, should this person even be going, now that we've seen more of these interviews, should he even be put on the air? There's something really, really wrong there. And secondly, there's just like the language he was using, and I noticed, was peppered with a lot of conspiracy theories. Obviously, this Jewish conspiracy theory we know. But he was saying things like, and I would, in other interviews as well, I would just happen to go look up things like Planned Parenthood was started by the KKK. Okay, and things like that. And if you Google stuff like that, those are really, they're rooted in some kind of kernel that's been amplified that has nothing to do with reality. But he's just freely dropping those bombs everywhere, because I think that also he's not going to take the time to, someone told him that once and he's going to have it. And I really think it comes from, I don't think it's a pose. I think he really believes that thing, because he's doubling, tripling down. And so therefore it's kind of like how Trump really believes some of the stuff he says, because psychologically, if he doesn't believe it, if he doesn't believe that he lost the election,
there goes his existence.
Exactly. And so I think that this is, I don't think this would have happened if Kanye came to age, his music came up like in the early 90s when we were in a different political climate in the country. I think this is just I think this is a product of the times.
Mm-hmm. Well, when Chris Cuomo, who's on News Nation now, which is the same company that owns my radio station, so we had access to Chris Cuomo. He had Kanye West on the other day, as well as Bill O'Reilly, and then they did the Pennsylvania Senate debate. So we're talking to Chris Cuomo, and I never got to ask him the question, why did you put Kanye on? I would not have. I think at some point you go, now it's just the train wreck, and there's no real value to be gained here. When Kanye used to say things that were a little off the rail, I always attributed that to this sort of artistic genius, and that's what you get when you get these really creative people. They sometimes say things that are unforgivable or unpredictable or uncomprehensible, But now that just seems to be the stock in trade. And I don't know if it's, again, a function of his mental wellness, or is he just found a lane and that's the lane he's going to go down? And I take your point, Brandon, that plenty of people who are not mentally well don't resort to this. So you can still be held accountable for your actions. But right now, it does lead me a little bit to like, okay, then how accountable do you hold big businesses that could have seen this coming? That said, you know what, but man, we could make money with this guy if we stocked his stuff in our stores in the malls. So eventually it'll blow up on us. But in the meantime, let's run the money train while we can. And that seems to have happened, too.
I mean, Chris Cuomo's trying to start that network. You know, I mean, I think he's kind of – I don't think his ratings are comparatively – I think that was a good big boost to let people know about his show and everything. I think that's the answer there. The one other thing I would add is, you know, to this point, he hasn't been – he hasn't seen any sort of pushback by his fans for – his longtime fans up to this point. His last thing he did was this, he's been doing these release shows, listening parties in football stadiums around the country. I attended the one in Soldier Field when that was, and people paid like a lot of money to go sit there for hours waiting for him to show up. And when he showed up, it was a recreation of his mother's house. This bunch of cars came in and they drove around it. They piped in the music. It was all lip synced or not even lip synced at all. And that was it. I think people were expecting a concert, but you know what? He filled Soldier Field, and people seemed really happy to be there because they came up with this guy's music, which was.
And they were part of an event, and they were
and really, really.
Brandon, good. You were there, weren't you?
I was one of the people. Yes.
Yeah. And I wonder, like, will that, if he were to do that again, would he be able to fill Soldier Field? Would those tickets sell? I don't know.
You know, this is really fascinating. I believe Kanye's fan base has changed. Because I was talking about this with another person about my age. We both grew up listening to Kanye West, and we've noticed something. As Kanye's views have been spewed more and more, and as he's become more just hateful and embraced Trump and things like that, and Candace Owens talking points, like he's really ruining his empire off of Candace Owens. The people that were fans of him back in the College Dropout days, early 2000s, they look at him as an artist that died, and they kind of like Prince or Michael Jackson. You listen to their old stuff, you reminisce about the past, because this guy you see now is you don't know who that is. And when you look at the sales for his music now, I would reckon, Mark, Soldier Field would still be packed.
Yeah, I do too.
I think it would look different. I think what I mean by that is when I went to the Soldier Field event, it was a diverse crowd, but it was still mostly black. I feel like his fan base now, I think you would have that packed out with right wing people, with mostly white kids. I think that would be it. I don't think you're going to have as many black people supporting publicly. That's the other thing, too. They might support in private. But now, after all this, will they actually show up to something like that, a concert, an event? Yeah. I don't think so. Because this is a man who's been – he's had doors shut in his face his entire career. People saying, you can't do this. People saying, you're not good at this. From the beginning, Jay-Z, his mentor – he has a whole song about how he just wants to get Jay-Z's approval. There's a theory out there that everything Kanye does is really just to get Jay-Z's attention. It's just what a fall from grace from this person who really could have been one of the greatest entertainers of all time.
Really profound point.
He's a phantom.
Yeah. Great point.
I have the Emerson College polling that just moved moments ago, conducted October 20th through the 24th. The margin of error, this would be post-second debate between Darren Bailey and J.B. Pritzker. The margin of error is plus or minus 3 percentage points. I don't see in front of me if this was conducted of eligible voters or likely voters, but here's what I do know. if the election for governor were today, who would you vote for at this time? J.B. Pritzker, 50.4%. Darren Bailey, 40.8%. Scott Shuler, 2.6%. Someone else, 1.7%. Undecided, 4.4%. What you really have there is J.B. up by less than 10 points now. What is that? 9.6 points. It was double that some time ago. They then asked the people who said they were undecided, although you are undecided, which candidate are you leaning towards at this time? 27% J.B. Pritzker, 33% Darren Bailey, 37%, 39% somebody else.
Pritzker should be way far ahead. He should be racing towards the finish line here, and he's still not there.
What this shows, like, it's closer than we thought it would be. And I think it shows that the GOP plan and the Bailey plan to use the Safety Act and hit on violence, crime, and even a little bit of inflation, right? The issue surrounding that. But more so crime and the Safety Act, it's working. There's still a lot of confusion, fear, paranoia about what the Safety Act is. Pritzker in that debate did not give great responses on the Safety Act, especially when asked, what parts of this would you want to change? It didn't really answer the question at all.
He said, amend it, don't end it, but they didn't say how they were going to amend it.
Didn't say how. Exactly. And people want to hear that, especially when the messaging has been controlled by Bailey and GOP and the Red Wing on what they want to define the Safety Act as. And we've seen the mailers go out and things like that. Like, we're seeing that. What's interesting to me is the gain of 5 percentage points, too, with these undecided voters. I mean, people are being swayed by the ads we see on TV.
I think
so. By
this.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, that ad, we talked about the ad, that's shocking ad, where it just shows this woman being abducted in Chicago.
The Scream.
The Scream. I was in a bar watching a Bears game when that played. We all thought something was happening, something was wrong with programming, and it froze the entire place. Wow. It's working.
Same survey said, where are you? While JB's up by, say, 10 points, 9.5, 10 points, 66.4% of the people in Chicago are for him, 20% are for Darren Bailey. Chicago suburbs, it's not 66 for JB, it's 52, and 41% in the suburbs favor Darren Bailey. Outside of Chicago, rest of the state, 40% JB and 53% Darren Bailey. Any surprises there, Austin, to you?
The rule of thumb for statewide Republican candidates in Illinois is that if you can get to 20% in Chicago, you can win.
He's at 20.2.
So that's surprising. And I remember, you know, a lot of people are talking about, like, yeah, Darren Bailey called Chicago a hellhole. There are a lot of people in Chicago who agree with, not a lot, but like there is a base of people in Chicago who would agree with Darren Bailey's assessment of Chicago. And if he's getting enough of those people to see a 20% Bailey vote in Chicago, that I would not be happy with that if I was J.B. Pritzker. I think the question of this race has always been, you can pull down Pritzker's favorables significantly. And that has been proven to be effective with those ads. The question is whether those people then go vote for Darren Bailey. If you're an incumbent governor and you're only polling at 50%, you should be very worried.
Yes.
It's Darren's obviously only at 40, right? So if Darren Bailey finishes in the 40s, I think that's a massive loss for J.B. Pritzker, right? If he finishes, if the race finished today and that was the final
it's
result.
It's not much of a mandate, is it?
Right. And he exceeded, and Darren Bailey greatly exceeds expectations. I think that's exactly right. It speaks to the policy agenda that was pursued by Pritzker over his
The crime
his first
issue, though, Austin, is still only 9%. When asked which issues are most important to you, 39% said the economy, 17% still say threats to democracy, 12% say abortion, 9% say crime. Well, that's, to me, J.B. Pritzker's meal ticket right there. Those are issues upon which he would score favorably, right?
No. Illinois has the highest unemployment rate in the country.
I'm saying
we have our, and taxes are up tremendously under the current governor. Has not been the center of Bailey's campaign.
No, it is
right?
not.
The center Pritzker's a failed leader on crime.
Pardon me. What's going to motivate people to vote? Well, the abortion access is an issue that's number three on this list. And to me, that's an issue that would turn out votes for J.B. Pritzker, the Democrats. Similar threats to democracy. Democrats see the actions of the right wing as more a threat to democracy, I would wager, than the other way around. I guess the economy's not all that great, but crime, where Dick Uihlein has spent millions of dollars, is only 9% of the people say that's the most important issue to them.
I think where Pritzker's vulnerability is with Democrats who are just not excited about him, who just don't like him. They don't like Bailey either. And I think that I think Pritzker represents a type of Democrat that they're kind of more moderate Democrats. They don't see themselves in. They see him as kind of smug, and again, like, I think are turned off by his wealth and sort of this assurance. The amount of money spent on this race is historic, and so I think that, like, I feel like that's like the vulnerability there is actually within his own party, of just getting those. How do you motivate those people to go vote for you?
Yeah,
get out of their house and go vote for you when they kind of don't like you.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
You know, and they just don't like the other guy too, you know? And so I think that party allegiance there, he will have the progressive Democrats, obviously, and will come out in people who are sort of the activist Democrat side. But I don't know what a hold he has of getting those other people out of the house to go vote for him.
One last thing, guys. How do you think the Emerson College poll, I'm reading from The Hill, in a hypothetical matchup in the 2024 presidential election, word held today, and the presidential candidates were Donald Trump and Joe Biden, who would you vote for at this time? So Trump, Biden, you want to guess what percentage, Austin, each candidate gets in a poll right now?
In Illinois. Got it.
Fair enough.
47, Biden, 38, Trump.
That's it.
That's actually it?
Yes.
Wow. Yo.
That's the coolest thing I've ever done on the show.
Here's exactly it. You're within the margin of error. You said 47 or 48 for Biden. It's 49. You said 38 for Trump. It's 37-1. So, yeah, you nailed it.
Okay.
That's somewhat close to the – I would think, yeah, I would –
You think that's a national trend too,
Bailey,
Mark?
It's close to the Bailey Pritzker margin, right?
Yeah, right. Let's see. Here the margin would be 12 points, and it's 9 or 10 points. So the top of the ticket where Biden – where that's the other thing too. Does Bailey at the top of the ticket help the party in Illinois? Austin, why are you making that face?
I don't know. I think it remains to be seen, right? Because – his candidacy has brought about this really bombastic messaging that has been targeted so heavily at J.B. Pritzker that you could see how that it would actually motivate the Republican base to get out and vote. And maybe it's in some cases it might not be for J.B. Pritzker, but I could see how that would have an effect on turnout. On the other hand, maybe, you know, there's some suburban Republicans who would rather not go vote for Darren Bailey, and they don't see a compelling, say, Senate candidate that they want to vote for, and maybe they don't come out. So I remains to be seen, I think.
Yeah, it seems to be a one-off to me. Okay, there's those two guys, but does that motivate somebody to vote in the Secretary of State's office or for a congressional office or for a Senate seat, Republican as well? I would guess not. Looking at the clock again, now we're at 20 after.
I'm gonna split, but thank you. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed this conversation.
Good to have you, Mark.
Good to hear you, Mark.
Good to see you, Mark.
You guys, I learn a lot from all of you guys, so thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, bro. Thank you.
Take care.
So he covered the Kanye West show at, what was that? Was that at Soldier Field? And you were there,
too.
By the way, didn't at the end of that, where he has his mom's house, didn't he burn it down or blow it up or something at that event?
He burned it, set it on fire.
And the message there was that just pyrotechnics or was that, and therefore I'm moving I don't know. You don't know either, do you?
There's plenty of ways people tried to interpret it. I have no idea what was going through that man's head doing that. It looked pretty.
Well, my son saw his last show at the United Center, and they said it was fantastic. It was – I mean, the guy's got some stagecraft. He knows how to put on a show. Give him that.
That's the tough part. Guy's a great performer, and I would argue still a great producer. He still understands music. People have been moved by his gospel stuff he's put out. The Sunday services he does where he brings mainstream gospel artists together and just talks about faith and love. You're like, oh, yeah, okay. If Kanye sticks to that, I think we're good. And then he goes and does this, which there's no love in what he's doing now. It's just, it's a shame.
Hey, Austin, one more poll for you. Ready? Emerson College.
Can you guess it?
Guess that.
Let's see if he gets this one right. This is the one that Austin and the Illinois Policy Institute have put a lot of thought and energy into. Austin was on our show talking about it. How do you plan to vote on Amendment 1, which would, and this is interesting too, forget about how it's posted on the ballot itself, but even if you're going to ask people about it, you've got to tell them about it. So this is very instructive, isn't it? And the question is, how do you plan to vote on Amendment 1? Which would add a new section to the Illinois Constitution's Bill of Rights that would guarantee workers the right to organize, bargain collectively, and negotiate wages, hours, and working conditions. You know, Carol Marie was on here, and I said, well, who would be against any of that? And she says, don't be so sure, John, that people are automatically going to check a box for labor or workers' rights. That's not so sweet as you make it sound. I thought this all sounds good to me. I don't know. I'm just a schlub. I've been busy. But yeah, that's a good idea. 54% plan to vote yes on it. 24%. 54-24 plan to vote no. 16.5% are undecided. Are you surprised by those numbers?
So the Emerson poll I saw, I believe, had Illinois at 54-30. 54,
wow.
Yes.
Was that the most recent one, too? I'm looking at
I think that was the one from today.
October 2024. Well, I'm absolutely reading from the sheet that Pete handed me. So
interesting.
Put it this way. All right. So you're either 20 or 15% off. What do you think of that?
It's all comes down to the point that you just raised, which is how this is worded. And on the ballot, when you read the like 4 or 5 sentence description of it, it sounds like the Rainbows and Puppies Amendment. And unions have raised $14 million to run TV ads for the last 6 months saying that this is about workers' rights. And we've been able to muster some opposition to that. And we are working really hard to tell people the truth about the total scope of what this does, that it's very extreme, that Illinois would be the only place in the nation with something like this, that it would really tilt the power balance permanently towards government unions and thus result in higher property taxes. And when people hear that message, it flips 2-1. You know, it's a 2-1 winner. If they hear that, hey, this can result in higher property tax bills, it's a 2-1 loser.
You say that. Well, I know that. But that's, you know, notice they didn't put that in there. What if at the end of this thing it said, and negotiate wages, hours, and working conditions, comma, though it might raise your property taxes $4,000.
Which are paid for by taxpayers. Or being truthful about the fact that this isn't going to apply to anyone in the private sector. It's only going to apply to the government sector. That's the biggest bait and switch to me. And that's the one thing that the proponents have never answered for, which is why their chief sponsor said that this doesn't apply to the private sector, which he said correctly on the Senate floor. So this is all about awareness of the full scope of what this amendment does. If people are only getting what unions say and they only get what's on the ballot, it will win. If they hear the full scope of what it does, it's going to be much harder. The other quick thing to mention about this is even with a margin like 50-30 or, you know, 55-35, that doesn't guarantee passage because constitutional amendments in Illinois have this very confusing rule where you either need to get 60% of all people voting on the question itself or more than half of all people casting a ballot. So a big factor that people need to look for on election night is how many people aren't voting on the question at all. And the higher that number is, the more people who just say, like, I don't understand this and they don't vote on it at all, the more difficult it's going to be to pass. So I do expect it to be very close.
Oh, you might. So in other words, the ballot initiative might win, but not pass, if you will, because not enough people voted for it.
Not win by enough. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that threshold? Do you know what that threshold is?
Yeah, so here's a good way to think about it is, say if 10% of people drop off, don't vote, you actually need 54-55% of people voting yes on the question.
Right.
If you see more than 16% of people drop off, you need 60% to pass. That would be the threshold. That's easier to hit.
than half of all voters.
Wow.
One other note, if the election were for Senate held today in this same survey, who would you vote for at this time? Tammy Duckworth or Kathy Salvey? And Salvey has 39.3 to Tammy Duckworth's 49.1 with, what's the difference there, about 8, 9, 10, 11, 12% undecided.
So Salvey gained support too.
Yeah, it looks like it. I'm surprised to see Salvey at 39%, the Republican, to a, I will say, very popular. I would say, I don't know how you describe Tammy Duckworth. She seems fine. She just doesn't seem to do much for me. It's like, well,
she's fine. There.
I know. She hasn't done anything super wrong, so that's right. Usually good enough.
She doesn't rock the boat.
Yeah. Speaking of rock the boat, one other issue for you guys. It is a sort of guaranteed income plan. Beginning in December, $3,250 Cook County residents will begin getting $500 a month for 2 years. The Cook County Promise Guaranteed Home Income Pilot got 233,000 applicants for that guaranteed income in 15 days. Next month, the recipients will be chosen by lottery. The median household income of an applicant is $15,000. The average household that applied has 2.5 people. According to the county, more than one-third of the applicants are unemployed. More than one-fourth have delayed medical care due to the cost. And 10% report having unstable housing. So it sounds like the money has been targeted to the right people. You know, those are the applicants. Presumably the people that are randomly selected will kind of fall into those slots. Do we like this idea? I brought it up to my listeners as a sort of a non-scientific click survey, and about two-thirds of them said we don't, because it seems like we're rewarding people for not having initiative or taking control of their own circumstances. People also worry that people will abuse the money if you just give them $500 a month. That's crazy. What are we doing, just giving people money?
You know, I think with universal basic income, it's an idea I support. It's an idea that I'm curious how it's actually going to flesh out. This is a pilot program.
It's a pilot program.
So it ends after 2 years.
Yeah, but it's a two-year pilot program. I mean,
$500 a month for 2 years.
Yeah, some programs run 2 years, but go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good for 2 years. I would challenge those people that, you know, are worried about it being misused or abused. You look at the people most impacted by this really don't have leeway, usually financially, to use or abuse that $500 a month. That's likely going to go to crucial things like utilities and rent and groceries, because they're on that fringe right there where it's just one paycheck away from poverty, one medical bill away from poverty, or they're currently just right there on the line. So I'm in support of that. My question is, how long is this sustainable? You see how many people applied for it, so obviously it's popular, but for 2 years, are we going to be able to factor in how it can be sustained? Is the funding going to be there? Is there going to be any way to support that funding? I think there's just so many questions here, but I think the idea behind it and the people that can help, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, these are federal pandemic dollars, and these people are at the poverty level.
UBI has always been a really kind of interesting concept for, I'll say, like, libertarians broadly, because Milton Friedman, who's like, you know, the godfather of sort of libertarian economics coming out of University of Chicago, had this idea for a negative income tax, which is sort of the same thing as universal basic income. Some people pay income tax, some people get money back from the government, right? And there's, you set the line and it effectively functions as a universal basic income. The critical thing for me is that, one, it's not, this is all federal pandemic money. It's all one-time infusion of cash. You're going to blow it on this thing. Hopefully they learned something and people are doing good studies about how this money is being allocated. But, you know, we've got the worst pension debt crisis in the country. And instead of addressing our debts, we are blowing it on fancy new programs that sound good politically because you're just giving out free money to people. That's one problem.
Okay.
The second problem is it actually gives you a really cool opportunity to rethink welfare and social services generally, because while I think universal basic income, I think, is the least paternalistic form of welfare if you're going to provide it to people. Instead of saying, here's your special food stamps, you buy food with that. Here's your special house money, you only get to buy houses like this with that. Here's your health insurance, you only get to go to these kinds of hospitals with that. Here's your public schools, you only get to go to these types of public schools with that. You are just giving cash to people and letting them make decisions about how to use it. I think that's a better way. Oftentimes that can be a better way to provide a safety net for people. And you don't get into these arguments about like, well, what kind of food should they be allowed to buy on food stamps?
Oh, man.
You know, or stuff, you know,
that'll
stuff
light
like
up
that.
The phone lines. Trust me. Right. I've done that show.
Exactly. Exactly. And so the big problem that there is, though, there is a political risk because there are going to be people who waste the money because we're all human beings and not all human beings spend money in the best. I waste money on stupid things all the time. So that is a big political risk because there's huge headline risk of, hey, this person who is getting $1,000 a month was spending it on, you know, stupid stuff and you taxpayer having to pay for that. So I think UBI is something that's like really interesting to think about in principle. And it will fail in practice, I fear.
You think so? And other cities and states have tried this, and they find that the people don't spend money on drugs and alcohol. Like Brandon said, they're so close to the margin that they get their car fixed. They buy vegetables. They're able to – the idea is that for $500, that enables you to find sufficient daycare, babysitters, or transportation that now you can get a job. And once you get a job, your life improves. So instead of being on average somebody making $15,000 a year, it's not that hard to make $35,000 a year these days. And but for $500 a month, we could get them over the hump. Boy, shame on us if that idea would work and we didn't give it a chance. Now, maybe it won't work because you don't like the idea of giving money to people because nobody ever gave you any money. If you were only making $15,000 a year with 2.5 kids and have to put off medical care, you'd probably be signing up for this too. I don't think it's – Austin, what did you say? A waste of money or something like that? Blowing this money. I don't think this is blowing – it's not a zillion dollars that we're going to spend here.
No, but it comes from some – it's not free. It comes from places and it can be used for other things. And if you're using it on this one-time program that isn't going to be sustainable and you're not using it as an opportunity to re-examine the rest of the social safety
why
net,
do you know
I think it's
not
really it's really wasted.
Why do you
because
think
there's not a sustained funding source for it.
Well,
it,
we got two if, years if, to get more
if
money.
They went to, I think that what you would want to do is you go to voters and say, and if we lived in a city where there was voter approval for tax hikes and new debt, as many cities have, many big cities have this mechanism, what you would have to do is go to voters and say, hey, we're going to tack on this to your sales tax, or we're going to tack on this to your property tax. It's going to go to fund universal basic income and let people decide.
That could be fascinating.
But they wouldn't vote for that, Austin.
Maybe they would.
Brandon, how do you think?
They might.
In Chicago, maybe they would. I don't know.
Yeah. In Chicago, perhaps. I do think, too, I implore people who think about someone getting $500 a month and worries about them wasting the money to also think about this. Even if that money were to not go toward groceries, food, utilities, let's say you got 2 kids, as this survey is finding, you get that extra $500 and you decide, you know what, I'm going to use that $500 to grab Christmas presents. I think poor kids deserve to be happy. Like, you know, they deserve the same things other kids do. So and I don't think that is a net loss if it's not something that's actually like, you know, a necessity that we deem as a necessity in society. You could argue things like that, recreation, enjoyment, entertainment, those things are necessities as well. They're just not as crucial to living, but they benefit your mental health. We already know the crises we have with mental health in our communities and how that plays out into violence in our communities. If we can, this might have some longstanding impact on that as well. Who knows? But I say, like you said, John, let's give it a try and see. 2 years is a long time for a pilot, so I'm very curious what we're going to find.
Well, maybe, yeah, that's a sufficiently critical mass of time that they'll come up with truly useful information. Two groups are studying it. One of them is from the University of Chicago. Do you know what the winning record in Chicago is right now for our professional sports teams on this day, Thursday, October 26th? 4 Blackhawks wins in a row. one Bulls win in a row. They play tonight. And one Bears win in a row. Our professional teams have won 6 games in a row. If I had an intern, I would have him look up or her look up how long ago it's been. How long has it been since Chicago teams? Because like every time the Cubs would win 4 or 5 games in a row, the Sox would lose one. And yeah, the win streak for the city, which I like to keep track of, we never got past like 3 or 4 all summer long. And then, you know, the Bears started off with, you know, the Bears aren't winning all their games. The Blackhawks aren't projected to win all their games. Lord, they're 4-2. Hooray. So
I'm curious about that too. Yeah. What's the longest Chicago streak?
Yeah. Well, you guys got a lot of people over there at the 9 different yeah, organizations.
We'll get someone right.
I'll get our research department on it. Urgently.
Well, good to see you, Brandon Pope and Austin. Mark had to check out, but we'll continue to follow the election results as we get closer to November and these other stories as well. We're produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Boom. Later. All right, man. Good to see y'all. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay,
thank
boys. You. Catch you later.
All right. Peace.
See y'all.
Later, guys.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.